All right.
Do a proper intro.
Okay, so I will do a proper intro.
Okay.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the new Coast City Podcast. This is our third episode of the Coast City Comics Club. I am your host, Tristan, and this is my co-host, Chad.
Hello, I am Chad.
Yeah, you are. You know it. That's what we know.
I do know it.
So far.
You're right.
Yeah, there we go. We're going to be talking about we've been doing weird issues so far. We've just been choosing at random, and this is a very random issue. This is even from the assistant editor's month.
I'll be right back.
Okay.
I'm just going to turn my fan
off. Lost Chad.
Goodbye.
Oh my God, so loud. And so assistant editor's month, if you don't know, was like a little gimmick from the 80s where they just kind of, there wasn't really a huge rule set for assistant editor's month. It was some of the issues went completely, totally goofball all the way over to like just total slapstick nonsense, like Fred Hembeck level nonsense. And some of them went super maudlin, and some of them, like this one, didn't really change much. This is a very classic Fantastic Four story, John Byrne. The only weird thing about it is that this is a full-on meta issue where John Byrne is himself, and he is interacting with the Fantastic Four. And this is a concept that goes way back with Fantastic Four and keeps coming back over time. Like I think back to issue, I'm going to get this wrong, so nobody quote me on this, but I think it was issue 10. It was established that Marvel Comics was hired to chronicle the adventures of the Fantastic Four, and that they're sort of the scribes of these adventures that exist in the real world. And apparently they wipe John Byrne's memory, or everyone else except for John Byrne's memory, every time one of these things happens. I don't know. There was something weird in this issue. But yeah, this is Fantastic Four number 262, the trial of Reed Richards, correct?
That is correct. Yeah. Okay. I did do some research into this one.
Oh, thank God.
A little bit. So, Assistant Editor's Month conveniently happens when San Diego Comic-Con traditionally happens.
Is that true? Yeah, I didn't know
that.
Yeah,
it normally coincided with San Diego Comic-Con, so when the managers, or editors in this case, got to go to San Diego Comic-Con, someone still got to run the books.
Oh, funny.
So then it's Assistant Editor's Month. So
that's awesome.
A little slice of life right there for you.
I did not know that.
A lot of these guys, so it's not just the Fantastic Four. You are right that in the 616 universe, Marvel Comics is real. All the writers and everybody are real in that sense.
Okay.
I think it was, from the fandom page I read, all the writers are to appear in their prime whenever they're shown.
Nice.
Nice.
Yes, not for vanity's sake, just because that's the way that it is.
Exactly.
Goes.
And Marvel Comics is the only one officially licensed in that universe to retell the stories of any Marvel hero.
Yeah.
Because John Byrne shows, this isn't his first appearance. It is this editor's appearance. It's credited as his first appearance in Marvel Comics. I can't remember. It's Mike something. I can't remember his last name. But John Byrne shows up again in the Thing comic because the Thing shows up because he doesn't like the way he wrote the comic. So he shows up to complain.
The Thing is referencing an issue of the Thing when he had complained to John Byrne about how he'd portrayed him in the comic.
The Thing, very much so in this issue, is very not impressed with John Byrne at all, which is delightful. And
but very impressed with Odin. He is like straight up smitten.
Well, we'll get there. We'll get there. But yeah, he also makes an appearance in an Alpha Flight comic. Like John Byrne makes the rounds, and apparently a bunch of them do.
And that's interesting. I like the fact that this is a Fantastic Four trope. I mean, it does exist elsewhere in the Marvel universe that you see characters, but like when Millar took over at the end of his thing, he was like, here's Millar in the universe. And then, you know, all, like every writer kind of has done that little, like, here I am in the universe talking to these characters.
Even they actually they went.
And I think that's cool.
They went one step further with it once too, because I remember in the Hereafter story that Mark Waid, Mike Rango did, when the Fantastic Four meets God, it's Jack Kirby.
Yes, that's right. Yep, I remember.
And he
that.
Fixes Reed's face just by erasing part of his face and drawing his face back, and he goes, "Ah, there you go."
That's right.
So they do this stuff all the time.
Yeah, it's wonderful. I mean, this is it's funny that you chose this one, because this is for current continuity, for what's actually happening right this second in comics. This is a big issue, mm-hmm. because the big super popular Thor run that's going on right now, that is like red hot for some reason. I mean, I think it's great, but it's all Galactus centric, and it's all based on these origins that they're establishing in this. I think there's some previously ons for his origin in a Thor comic as well, but this is like a really nice encapsulation of Galactus's origin from as told by Odin, which I thought was cool.
Yeah, I saw that too. It's like a Marvel Tales, or just I think it's also just some early Thors too, but they all cover the basis of Galactus's origin. But you never read this one before?
No, this is I was never a Fantastic Four person. I read basically when Waid did Fantastic Four, I was like, oh shit, this is amazing. Then Hickman did Fantastic Four, and I was like, oh my god, this is the greatest thing I've ever read.
Yeah.
And I had never read anything prior to that. Fantastic Four had always been one of those, like, you couldn't force me to read it kind of series. Mm-hmm. And now I go back and I see some of these and I'm like, oh my God, the Silver Age stuff is phenomenal. I mean, this is not Silver Age, but I mean, some of the older stuff is better than I would have given it credit for.
Yeah.
This is Copper Age, I guess, is what they would call this.
Yeah, sure.
But it, sure. But it's, it's amazing. It's absolutely wonderful. Like, it makes me want to go back and read all of the Byrne Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
Which is not something I would have ever thought that I would have been into.
And what does your cat have to say?
Oh, well, he's having a conversation with the kids next door who are screaming in our driveway. So as every time they scream, he screams.
Oh, okay.
So we're going to probably get a lot of that. They seem to be operating on a very similar pitch, and so there's something that the cat identifies as very cat-like about the screaming neighbor kids.
Understandable.
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
So,
yes,
I had never read this before either. We had mentioned Reed Richards a couple of times already. Yeah. I think once in conversation, and then on the last podcast. So I thought that'd be a nice segue into this. But I just went to I went to a top 10. Stories, Fantastic Four stories.
Nice.
And I had read most of them, but I hadn't read this one. So I was just like, you know what? Let's dive in. If both of us haven't read it, I think that would be interesting. So,
one of the concepts that's in this, I mean, not to jump around. I mean, fuck it. We'll jump around. Whatever. Yeah. It doesn't really matter. But my favorite concept that I don't know if this is where it's introduced for the first time. I don't want to be actually by too many people, but, but the concept of Galactus as appearing as what your mind can conceive of him as. And humans conceive of him as this tall purple thing with a big pointy hat. And in this, when Galactus appears, you have this entire jury of all these different races that all conceive of him as something different. And you get each little person has their own view of Galactus, and you see a bunch of different Galactus heads mm-hmm. as they're seen by these different alien races. And I thought that was a great idea. And I like the way that it's portrayed. And I mean, obviously Byrne is an amazing artist, but I really loved what that was.
Yeah. That whole scene does that old Marvel thing where everyone's having a realization at once. And it's just a whole page of faces with like their mouths open. The first time I saw that was when I read, Infinity War when I was a kid.
Oh yeah.
You know, and you see that and you're like, oh, what a neat trick that is, you know, like an artistic trick. We should probably say what this is about.
Yes. we had talked, I think maybe the last issue we were talking about basically how fucked up Reed Richards is and how he has this tendency to always do things that are like, he always has these great moral ideas. And he is so smart that he assumes that his ideas are going to be that he's going to be doing the right thing no matter what. And then they tend to backfire. It tends to be some gigantic fuck up that makes a universally bad thing universally worse. And then, you know, and then they have to deal with it. And this, in this, at a previous point, there was a point when Galactus was dying and Reed makes the move to save his life. Reed is like the last moment, and he's like, I could let him die and it would save all of these planets and millions and billions of people would live. But fuck it, I'm going to play God. And he brings him back to life, essentially.
Yeah.
Or keeps him from dying, I guess.
Yeah, and then the other people we mentioned last podcast, the Shi'ar. Is it Lilandra?
Lilandra of the Shi'ar.
The Shi'ar.
And Gladiator, yeah. Her personal protector.
Ugh, that guy. They take exception with this.
Yes.
She gets a whole group of aliens from other planets that Galactus has already shown up and devoured. Yep. And they have him stand trial.
Yes.
To the greatest way a trial could be handled. There's a bunch of glowing circles hanging above there.
Yeah.
Which is connected to everybody's thoughts. And Reed has to get them all to be white. Yeah. And if they all go white, then he's not guilty.
Yep.
And those are the rules.
And his first move, being Reed Richards, his first move is to say, I'm guilty. Now, let me explain what that means.
Yeah, then he
smarmily.
Actually is himself in the process.
God.
Well, technically.
What I mean to say is that, of course, I did kill Galactus. We're just here to find out if that was a crime or not. Am I sympathetic? Oh, I'm not. Oh, shit.
Yeah. All the circles go to eye rolling at the same time.
If a circle could roll its eye, then absolutely all of those things would be rolling their eyes at that point.
Right.
Yes.
So the issue that sounds very grand actually starts off between a phone call between the assistant editor at Marvel and John Byrne. And the assistant editor is basically telling Byrne, like, hey, you're going to miss your deadline if you don't get the story. And he's like, I keep calling the Fantastic Four and they're not picking up their phone because they're across space and time getting on trail. And so the Watcher shows up. Grabs John Byrne and takes him to the trial because he says he needs to be there. He shows up and immediately the Fantastic Four is like, oh, hey, John, which was weird.
One of my favorite things that is in this that is part of the Marvel Universe is the Watcher, who for years and years and years essentially basically would show up and say, I only watch and I'll never do anything. Okay, I'm going to do this one thing. and it's like, you just did one thing last week and the week before. And like literally every week since 1964, you've pretty much just done one thing every time. He's like, I'm just going to do one thing. Hey, Johnny, could you go get the Ultimate Nullifier? That's kind of literally the biggest thing you could possibly ask someone to do. You had fucking Johnny go get the Ultimate Nullifier?
Yep.
Dude. I don't know. I was thinking I might nullify everything. Fuck it.
Do you think they just say that to mess with people, being like, oh, he's only going to watch. And then he's just like, nah, I'm going to fuck with it too.
Yeah, it's like a ninja move. It's like, he's like, aha, they'll never expect me to punch him in the face because I say that I don't do anything.
Exactly.
Yes. Speaking of which, another great Marvel moment, the Red Hulk punching out the Watcher.
Yeah.
that was just ridiculous. Oh, God. But yeah, so Reed is on trial, and it is Lilandra of the Shi'ar Empire who is bringing him. If, for those who are completely unfamiliar, she's an X-Men, sometimes ally, sometimes antagonist, who essentially was the guardian of the M-Kron crystal and for the Phoenix Force and all that other nonsense. So she arrived in that era, and apparently she was making out with Professor X for a while.
Hell yeah.
So, yeah.
She's
they're both weirdly bald. So.
And the old Professor X had those weird eyebrows too, and she's got those as well, which is probably,
that's
where the connection was made.
That was it. Yeah, sizzling hot connection over weird eyebrows. Oh my. Yes. So we have that. What happens? Oh yeah, so we get the origin of Galactus. We find out that his name was I don't know how they're saying that it's said. I like to think that it's Galen, like our friend Galen.
Yeah.
But I think it's probably Galen, as in Galactus.
But, oh, you just ruined that for me.
Sorry. Well, come on.
I always thought it was Galen. Always thought it was Galen. You're like that kid that shows up and goes, "It's Magneto," because he has magnet powers, and you're like,
I've never said that, but I mean, the reason his last fucking name is Magnus is because he's got magnet powers. Come on.
You know that kid.
I don't make
about,
up
though.
The dumb rules of the Marvel Universe. That wasn't my idea. Yeah. They didn't know that they were going to be talking to adults at some point about these comic books. That was not on the table at any point.
They don't know the schoolyard fights they started.
It was 6 to 12 was their demo originally, and then we are this anomaly that that was never planned for. So, yes. All right. We've got – so Galen is basically – Sorry, Galen.
Thank you.
So this Galen, he is a force of nature. We're basically told that according to Reed, he's necessary to the world, essentially. So he's not killing people. He's like a hurricane or anything else that's out there. He is supposed to be there. He's smashing everything in the background. And oh, that's Michelle. And he needs to exist. And there's an undercurrent that's kind of like hinted at that he is basically pruning the universe so that it doesn't collapse. Like, essentially, there's one panel in this where they say his world was dying. So Galen's world was dying, and they essentially put him into this, they transformed him into this world destroying monster. But they said that his world was dying and his universe was dying. And right. So what I got from that is that Galactus is basically stopping the universe from dying. Like he's holding off entropy.
Oh, that's interesting.
He is his own, like, that's what I get out of it, is that without him, I mean, the last line of the book is, there will be a day when he encounters a force that is too great for him to overcome, and woe to the universe on that day, or whatever the line is.
Yeah, the universe will mourn.
The right, exactly. So the universe without him, bad shit's gonna happen. Like, that's basically signaling the end of everything.
So that's interesting, because I took it that, I don't know if that picked up, probably did pick up the motorcycle. Sorry, everybody. I live near a rally track.
There's so much nonsense out my window, too.
Yeah. Was that just that Galen is from the universe prior, is how I've always taken it. And that when that universe died, he was the last person that survived. And then when the new universe was being born, they said, you have survived from the last universe. You're the last survivor of this universe. You now get to play a role in the new one. And that's how I've always taken it. And I feel like they kind of touched upon that in Immortal Hulk recently, where they were talking about him being alive at the very end. And that's how he became the Galactus.
Oh, yeah. That's interesting. I mean, because, yes, yeah. That totally makes sense. He is, yeah, I get it. And he also mentions that eternity, which is Marvel has a concept of eternity as a being, and eternity is his father, is what he says. So
yeah,
I mean, obviously, all of these concepts are big amorphous weird things, so they're not necessarily like concrete, like, hey, that's my dad eternity. But essentially, so in the story, we get to a point where Reed is like up against a wall, and basically Odin shows up because the Watcher has sent Johnny out to get help. He's like, go get Odin. Odin will explain the deal with Galactus. This will be fine. So he goes, he gets Odin. Odin shows up and he's like, hey, Reed's cool. Galactus needs to exist. He's this big important thing. Here's his origin story and all that. And essentially he basically says a bunch of things where he's like, he pretty much throws Reed in front of a bus because of the way that he is, which is great Marvel characterization. He's just like, he totally is guilty, but he's guilty for the best reasons. And I like this guy. And let me tell you. And then they're like, that sucks. It's like, you're not helping.
Yeah.
And then Galactus shows up, does the same thing. Basically Galactus comes in and he's like, hey, I need to exist, blah, blah, blah. And everybody's like, you've killed like all of our families. There's literally an assassin that shows up to try and kill Galactus. And his moment, I loved his moment. He just sort of shows up and he's like, aha, I have this device that can finally kill Galactus. And he's so, once he's actually face to face with Galactus and he realizes the cosmic importance of him and he sees him for what he is, he's just, oh, I'm nothing. And then he just turns around and leaves before even firing his magic weapon. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, oh, I am cosmically insignificant. I need to get out.
Oh, but I realized
Galactus
that
depresses him to death.
I realized that at the beginning of the pandemic, and I've been dealing with that ever since. Being cosmically insignificant.
Cosmically insignificant.
So this trial is wild because on one hand you have the head of the Shi'ar, which is a pretty big deal if you're just a regular person. And then you get all these people from alien civilizations as witnesses. And they apparently call it like Lalandra's just like calling like 30 witnesses in a row. Like some,
well, I think all of the witnesses are survivors of worlds that Galactus destroyed,
right.
I think.
Right. And yeah, they're all up there telling their stories. And some are just like, the story's so old that they weren't even there. It's just like a fairy tale at this point. But then on the other side, this is the defense team. Your defense team is Reed Richards, the smartest man on Earth. Then
Uatu. He's down with the sickness.
Uatu shows up. So you have a watcher. Then he goes, oh, you don't want to believe me? Maybe I'll just call the All-Father. The All-Father pops in, and then he goes, yo, I'm the All-Father. Reed's right. Let me tell you why. And they go, oh, still don't believe me? Well, what would you say if Galactus himself showed up and explained his whole motivation? Oh, is that still not doing it for you, everybody? What if the universe took human form and appeared before you and then just told you all what was up in your head? Like,
what if we tore reality with Galactus and the All-Father together, rip a hole in reality, and the hole itself becomes the embodiment of eternity, who then testifies on Reed's behalf?
Right.
Like, pretty convincing stuff there.
Can you imagine that many like cosmic entities showing up just to prove a point that you were right? Like, what an ego boost that would be.
It does make sense that Reed is a total egomaniac at this point.
Yeah.
It's like literally existence has come in to defend you and say, yeah, he is smarter than all of you. Shut up.
Yeah.
But
like, fights with his wife must be insufferable.
I'm sure they are.
I just don't think you're right. Oh, I'm sorry. Remember when the universe took form and told me I was correct? Yes, yeah, honey.
Existence would disagree with you. Yeah. The concept of life itself might disagree. I'm just saying.
Just put it out there.
Yeah, that's rough. I also feel like there's a Lovecraftian element here where Galactus is so huge and imposing that your brain has to work around him. And so if at that point, when your brain is working around Galactus, then eternity shows up, I have this feeling that everyone would go insane. That just literally everyone in the crowd would just lose their minds and just be blithering on the floor and drooling.
They kind of touch upon that at the end, because that's when John Byrne is just back at his desk and the Watcher's just like, hey, draw what you just saw. this absolute insanity that you just saw. If you could put that in a comic book, that'd be super.
That'd be great.
Everyone who is there basically understands that, like, the universe is just, we're all a part of this and nothing really matters, but yet everything matters and let's just be chill with each other. But he also mentions that they can't remember it because nobody has a mind there, probably with the exception of Reed and everybody else,
right,
that can't hold it. So he's like, you're just going to forget. But I love that the thing that they'll remember was that Reed was right. Because John Byrne goes,
that's it.
Wouldn't they just put him on trial again if we all forget? And he'd be like, no, they'll always remember his ass was right. It's like...
there you go. And just, that's the one thing that you all need to remember at this point is that Reed is always right.
Oh, okay.
But Reed is not always right, is what we constantly are shown from Fantastic Four comics.
And yet Reed is always making
situations worse.
Yes.
But in this case, it turns out that saving Galactus was something that needed to be done. And that is the big Thor story currently is... Now that Thor is the herald of Galactus currently, and he's going around as Galactus is dying, Galactus has been told that Thor is going to kill him. And so he's like, well, why don't I just give him extra cosmic power then? There you go. I'll give you your arm back and I'll give you cosmic power and then come around with me and then you won't kill me, right? But
sure.
He's still going to do it probably. Yeah, sure. That's fine.
Well, I think there's... I think there's another story that's going to be coming out soon where they're going to be doing a big Galactus story where they're talking about changing.
There's a negative Galactus.
His role.
Yes.
And then I remember the Ultimates, not the original Ultimates universe one, the one that happened after the big Secret Wars event, the one the Blue Marvel was ahead of, where they reversed him so that Galactus.
And he was big and gold.
And he was a life giver, not a life taker. Yep. So they've done a lot of stuff with Galactus. Like, very similar to this. And actually, one of my favorite ones was actually a Mark Waid one, too, where... I can't remember the exact circumstances, but Reed figured out that the energy that made Galactus was the same cosmic energy that gave them their powers. So he figured...
Yes.
He figured out a way to separate that from Galactus, and he made him Galen again.
Oh.
And then... Now the thing's wife, Felicia, like took him around like New York for a day and like showed him museums and stuff like that and like paintings. And they took him like, you know, I think they went to Hamilton actually. And like all this like weird stuff. And he was just like, oh, this is dope. I love life. You know, just like, and she's like, yeah, you should remember this when you become a giant earth eating terror again. That sometimes some of these planets are dope and maybe you shouldn't just eat them all because you're so disconnected from who you are at this point.
Yeah. I love the concept of Galactus. I love this gigantic thing that is just, but with Marvel, you get not as much as DC, but with Marvel, you do kind of start getting these leaps in size that are difficult to understand. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you start getting to a point with Galactus where they're like, oh yeah, and then Galactus is interacting with something. Like, he gets into a fight or something, and you're like, I don't know how that works.
Right.
I don't understand the concept of this thing interacting in that way with its universe. Because if he is just this, like, I mean... The Fantastic Four movie was probably right. He's probably just an amorphous cloud and you can't understand what he is. Like your brain's just putting him together.
That movie.
But no, man, it turns out they made all the right choices.
Turns out that movie was right. And that's the purpose of this podcast.
Was to say that those two Fantastic Four movies were dope.
So good.
Just kidding. They were fucking terrible.
What? How dare you? That opening scene with the Silver Surfer was amazing.
It's so funny. I'm such a sucker for all that shit. It's pathetic. When those movies came out, I knew they were terrible while I was watching them. And then I was in the theater and Johnny Storm jumps off a fucking building and says, flame on. And I'm like, I'm in. I'm like, I just saw that. And that's fucking amazing.
Those movies are tough.
The fact that I actually saw something that looked like that from the Fantastic Four, I was like, I'm happy about this.
Yeah, there were parts of it I liked. There really were. Like, yeah. I mean, obviously, like, Chris Evans as the Human Torch was amazing. Like, he nailed it.
He was such a douche.
Yeah, but he was Johnny Storm. You know, and I remember after I left that, I was like, man, if they don't make a Human Torch Spider-Man movie right now, like, I'm going to be upset.
Yeah. That's,
I mean, obviously it never happened.
That is the big, big missed opportunity there. Yeah. But they're constantly, I mean, like I was saying before, they're putting in the Marvel Universe, Uatu believes that Johnny Storm is reliable somehow. He is like literally the one person that has been proven over and over and over again to be completely unreliable. And he's always asking him to do universe saving things. And I don't know. It seems like a terrible decision, but I guess he knows because he sees all or whatever.
I wonder if it's one of those things too, where it's like Uatu does see everything and he knows what a prick he is. So he's just like, oh, this will piss Odin off. Like, I'll send him to go get him.
I'm sure it's something like that.
Like, yeah. Oh, he sent the flame one. He couldn't have sent the rock man.
Well, I mean, to be fair, the rock man doesn't know how to get there. And he can fly through space, so I guess that does help.
I guess that's true.
it always helps to be able to fly through space. These John Byrne era Fantastic Four comics have a feel that is, I don't know, it's so its own thing. It's not like it's different from the Silver Age, different from the modern age. It's like this era is just what it is. Like, it is, you don't get this from anything else. And I love the feel of it. It's so sincere. And I don't feel like comics in the Silver Age, like even the Kirby ones, even when they were being bombastic, they were still being at least a bit campy on purpose. They were appealing to a teenage audience. They were shooting higher for these like college kids and being like, we're being mod and silly. And this era, it always feels like even when he's joking, he firmly believes that the Fantastic Four exist in the universe and that he is telling their story. And I feel like that feeling you just don't get from comics, because modern comics are like trying to do big sci-fi stories with the Fantastic Four. They're trying to go really deep. And in these, they're like, they're just their own thing. Are people attacking you? Yeah, are you okay?
Right? One of my neighbors is setting off fireworks.
Are you sure?
Yeah, he must. Okay. He must have heard we're recording the podcast, so he's celebrating.
Oh, okay. Just like the cat.
He was like, episode 3, yeah!
Yay! So many celebrations. That's great. I'm glad to see that there's so many people in your neighborhood excited for this. This episode is just going to be my cat screaming and things exploding outside your
motorcycles
house.
Motorcycles and fireworks over here. That's actually the town motto for Gorham. So, Portland is Resurgam, and then Gorham is motorcycles and fireworks. Yeah, you know, actually,
you're sure that someone's not just getting ass paddled outside your house?
I don't know. You know what? It's none of my business.
It seems to be right outside your window, though.
You know,
so
if they don't,
they're making
as
it
long
your
as they
business.
Don't touch my tomatoes, I'm fine. I don't care. If I could make a connection to wrestling, if I could for
oh,
a moment,
God. Fucking
I will. So
of course
what you said about this kind of being silly and campy, but yet it seems more sincere than anything because of John Byrne's total belief, actually. Mm-hmm. Reminds me a lot of what people say about wrestlers with silly characters. Namely, like, The Undertaker, for example.
Right.
Like, it only works because it was Mark Calloway. Because he was the one who was just like, I am The Undertaker, and I'm going to make this... Obviously, if anyone else did it, it would have been just very, very dumb. But he's able he's able to take that character, much like how this John Byrne's able to take this incredibly silly concept and then make it work, because he's just like, yeah, this is awesome. And I'm going to make this work because, of course, it's going to work. I believe in this 100%. And I think
right.
I feel like you need to have that in order to be able to do the Fantastic Four. Like, I feel like Hickman have it because Hickman believes 100% in everything he's writing. Mark Waid also has that dedication.
Yep.
You know, and I feel like when you think of great Fantastic Four runs, you think of those guys, and I think you need to have that quality because a lot of what the Fantastic Four does, if it's not handled correctly, is dumb.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. I would say that the Fantastic Four, to me, is like the hardest. Oh my God, your house is gonna catch fire soon. But like, what they do is so silly. Like, they are at their core the silliest Marvel characters. I mean, obviously there are gonna be other exceptions that are far worse, but as a team, they feel the most. Just like they're more like a cartoon, they're more like a Hanna-Barbera property than they are like the rest of Marvel.
That's a good call.
Where it's like you get stuff like Spider-Man, and as silly as the core concept is, the actual Spider-Man stuff was never like the big drive. It was always his life, and then the big nonsense happened around him. Whereas the Fantastic Four, they themselves were huge nonsense all the time. Like, their whole life was just bizarro. They were living inside the most massively futuristic whatever. The entire Baxter building is like a gigantic supercomputer from the future. Every time they're in the laboratory, you get those big Kirby drawings of giant future electronics. And it is just in itself so much more cartoonish than even the weirder Marvel characters. And it needs a very special person, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Is it's like you only see the Fantastic Four working right when it has the exact right people on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the rest of the time it is very, it's hard to read for me. Like, a bad Fantastic Four story is like much worse than like a bad Superman story or something. It's just, it is really hard to read.
Yeah.
Although even Superman suffers from the same.
I was going to say, they're in the same boat.
Yeah.
Except Superman tries to have a real job, whereas Reed's just like, nah, fuck it, I'm a super scientist.
Right. And that's the thing, is you have nothing to ground them. Because Reed it's that same problem that people have when you make stories about royalty. You know, they're like, well, I don't relate to this person. I think they're an asshole and they have servants. Oh, that fucking sucks. You know, I feel bad for that guy because he has my job. You know, like, I don't relate to these people. And him being the smartest man in the world it's hard to relate to. And then so they give you the torch, but he's a 60s like Dennis the Menace stereotype for a teenager. He's Archie. Like, he's basically Archie Andrews with superpowers. He's like, I'm going out on a date. I've got two dates tonight. What am I gonna do? And it's like, sure. But it still feels 60s, like, even now. And I think Byrne, when he was doing the Torch especially, did it better than almost anybody. And I feel like he was the one that brought all of those weird relationships that he would have and his like stardom complex and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was played in a way that didn't make you want to punch him in the face the way that it was for a lot of other. That's all.
Yeah.
And I feel like Invisible Woman, like, she actually has some depth in the Byrne run, whereas she gets short shrift all the time, which is too bad. The first time I ever was like, oh, I think they might have figured out her character was when they made her a super spy in that one little short run that happened like a year ago.
That's right.
I was like, oh, right, she's invisible. Why isn't she working for S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Yeah, see, they're all really interesting because, like, the Human Torch also has the issue where, unlike a lot of Marvel heroes, he loves the fact that he has his superpowers.
Right.
Because he can turn into flame, he can fly around, and then when he's done, he's completely normal. And unlike any other mutant, everybody loves him. So they're just like, oh, ladies want to date him. He's got a super cool power. He can fly around. Nothing bad happened to him. Yes. The only one who's semi-relatable on the team is the Thing, which is, I think, right. in the reason why in the 70s and 80s he took off was because, yeah, he is a monster, but he's got a heart of gold, which is, right. which is, you know, great.
And it makes Johnny less relatable because Johnny, like, it's so punching down, to use a current term on an older property. It really is. It's like, oh, what's the matter? You terribly deformed? what's the matter? Your life is ruined? Oh, boy. Like, fuck you, dude. Mm-hmm. I can see why he constantly wants to mash him into the wall.
Yeah, because there's the running gag in Fantastic Four that Johnny's always playing pranks on him. He's like shooting pies in his face right. and nonsense like that.
Yeah.
Then Sue is also interesting because I remember... They always do like the weird things where they kind of hint, like, she's kind of like Iceman of the X-Men, where they're always just like, well, you know, yes. the most powerful member is Sue, actually. You know, that's like right. that's like something somebody always throws in the conversation. And only right. like a few times have they really done it, because I know there's like I think it was like with Dr. Doom or somebody once, she like put just like a little invisible bubble in his brain. Yep. You know, this is like, if you come one step closer, your head's about to blow up, just an FYI, you know. And like,
I remember that one moment, and I was like, this is a great idea, but it is going to make a lot of problems for writers after this,
right?
Trying to explain why you don't use this constantly,
right,
when you're in mortal peril.
And there's another Galactus tie-in story they did with her once, where she, I think this was also during the Wade run. Jeez, we should really read the Wade run. If you haven't, read that one. It's all really, really good.
It's awesome.
Where she gets kidnapped by a bunch of aliens because they made technology that would hide their planets from Galactus. That's how I'm going to loop this back to what we're talking about right now. But the only thing that could reveal their planets was Sue's powers, is what they figured out.
Yes.
So they're like, well, we got to kill Sue. It's like, that's the only solution. Not that she won't do it. Just that, well, we got to murder her to make sure this never happens.
Well, and you also have to kill Super Skrull too now. So, because he can do the same thing.
It's true. Or any of the other, thousands of manufactured Super Skrulls that they made? Like,
yeah, I think so. I mean, because Super Skrull is the amalgam of all of the Fantastic Four's powers, and he can also take away, apparently, an invisible person can remove can see through the invisibility.
Right.
And that's the only another invisible person like him or her can see through the other's thing. That was that was new to me. I read that in Empire this week.
Oh, really?
I was like, no, that was a little piece of that. He was like, nah, I see their ship. It's over there. Ding dongs. Think that they're invisible? Not invisible to me. I'll get them, bro. Don't worry about it.
Come on, bruh, yeah. bruh. Just blow them up.
Come on, bruh.
They're right there.
I'm going to blow them up, all right?
You know there was a meeting about that, too.
That's a dead-on Super Skrull impersonation, by the way.
That's exactly how he talks. Yeah, there was definitely a meeting at Marvel about that, too. Like, someone set that up in Outlook. It's just like, invisibility rules meeting. We have to be there.
That's so weird. And I mean, there is a Bible at Marvel that everybody has to abide by all of these very specific weird rules. And so every time somebody comes up with some sort of crazy idea, it's got to go through a vetting process to be like, all right, I guess from now on, Sue can make bubbles in people's brains and kill them. All right.
Yeah.
Figure out how to deal with that later.
Yeah. I think once you cross that line, you really got to go back and be like, oh, well, shouldn't Stu just be able to stop everybody all the time?
Yeah, it is too bad, but it's so fun when they do those sorts of things, because Iceman is the perfect example of that. He is the other one where it's like, he's always listed as one of the Omega Mutants, but he's always been too goofy to use his powers the way that he could basically freeze the entire world. He could ice nine the whole world if he wanted to.
Yeah, he could freeze the air, right? Like,
yeah, essentially he's ridiculously overpowered. And so, I don't know. I love that, but there is no regulator on it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was that story where Emma Frost got into his head and was like, you know what? You're a weenie. Here's how I'd use your powers. And she was like, fucking destroying everyone with crazy ice lances and things. And he was like, hey, whoa, back off. I don't want to do that. I like snowball things. I think that's way more fun.
I like ice, the ice, the living ice golems he could make, though. That's fun.
That is fun. It's, but it is also wicked, wicked OP.
Right.
And Sue, obviously wicked OP, because she has manipulation of, like, she can levitate people. So she can basically fly, correct? Using telekinesis of some sort.
Well, I mean, she could just make like a pillar, an invisible pillar that just right. shoots her up into the sky. Like, she can make invisible steps or whatever yeah. she wants to do. Yeah, she's like a Green Lantern, basically, but everything's invisible.
Yeah. Yeah. Damn. Yeah, she is definitely underutilized.
Green Lantern also should be unstoppable.
Yeah, well, you know, that's, and then that brings us to Gladiator, who is, should be one of my favorite characters because he's so stupid and his power is so ridiculous. But he shows up in this as Lilandra's personal guard. And his deal is, of course, that he cannot be stopped. He's virtually invincible as long as he believes he is. He is as strong as he believes he is. He is literally powered by his own belief in his powers, which should be pretty much godlike at a certain point.
Right.
And even when Galactus shows up, he's like, oh, fuck that.
Cause he didn't believe.
Right. Exactly. Well, Galactus's presence essentially just like made him go, nope. Not even gonna bother.
He's like, you know, I'll punch anything for you, babe, but I ain't punching that.
Yeah, like, that was basically his thing. Was yeah. He was like, I'm sworn to protect you, but I'm not gonna do any good against this giant purple thing.
We have so, three concepts of reality kind of staring down at us right now, and I'm not sure if that's punchable.
Yeah, not a punchable situation. But yeah, he has been taken out several times, though. I think he was taken out by Sam Guthrie at one point.
Was he a Blastin?
I think he was. I assume he was a Blastin.
Okay.
He was taken out by Onslaught at one point.
Yeah.
I seem to remember that.
Onslaught was taking out everybody.
Onslaught, that was basically the big deal for that whole storyline was, oh my God, you can knock out Juggernaut? Holy crap. Who could do that?
I remember that issue because they saw him like fly over New Jersey. And then they found Juggernaut's body, and all he could say was, Onslaught. And they're just like, what is that?
It was good. That was good stuff. Oh, man. So, all right. So, essentially, this is we pretty much have the whole thing. It's a very simple story.
It is.
Pretty much.
It touches on a lot, though. And I feel like it continues to touch on stuff to this very day. So I feel like.
Oh, yeah.
Even though it's.
No, this is being referenced currently, and it has been referenced over and over again in different Marvel books.
Yeah.
This is definitely a very important book for Marvel.
I don't know if you need to read the whole Burn run, but this one's worth it for sure. Just to go back and check it out. I mean, the art's awesome. It's very. It's classic Marvel. There's a lot of really cool spreads in here, wild backgrounds, and you know, having John Byrne in there is a lot of fun too. Like, it's just a cool read to go back. It covers a lot of origins, and I think it's worth it as a primer or maybe just a refresher for even current stuff that's yeah. going on right now.
Yeah,
if I may,
I agree.
If I may, put myself out there.
You
like
may.
That. Okay. The fireworks are over at this point.
Oh my God. Insanity.
Half of the town's this been has blown been, up.
This has been the loudest. I think this is the loudest podcast I've ever done. There's been like shit going on outside. My cat's been going bonkers. He's been knocking food into stuff and making all sorts of noise.
Him. Yeah.
This is literally the most distracted, noisy podcast I will go on record as saying I have ever done. out of several hundred podcasts I've done. I think this is it.
That's
it.
You've done a lot with Matt too, and that's saying something, I think.
It's saying something. Yeah, we just did a 2-hour long podcast about Popcorn, the movie, last night.
Jesus. So oh, God.
It was worth it. That movie's in fucking insanely good.
Yep.
Check it out. Funbox Monster Podcast. Yeah, so I think we've got all that we can say about that. So yeah, hit us up next week. We'll be here.
Oh, guess what?
Oh,
remember how last week?
Butt.
Yeah, chicken butt was the correct answer.
You got me.
Remember how last week you told me to set up an Instagram account?
You did.
I did do it. We're up to like 45 followers already.
Holy shit.
But if you follow us,
diddly
diddly do is go at diddly 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 wee. There's 7 E's at the end. Don't mess it up.
Okay.
Because the other accounts are unbelievably horrid. No, it's at Coast City Comics with an S Club. It's too long.
Coast City Comics Club.
But it was the best I could do. With what's available for Instagram usernames. But yeah, go there. Yeah. I've posted a few things on there already. There's a great picture of Grace Jones and Dolph Lundgren together. So
that is good. Oh, and if I have to do a correction and omission, I read up on that because I was interested to see what I was like, how close I was on the Grace Jones thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess maybe they did not actually literally have Grace Jones who was going to be there. Her look was based on Grace Jones, and the entire project was commissioned by like Island Records or something like that, who wanted to have their own Disco Kiss, who was also going to be a comic property.
Okay.
But I don't know whether or not the Grace Jones was ever scheduled to be a part of it. I hope she was.
Okay.
But I know that the original designs were to look like her, and then they changed her to look like Bo Derek.
Okay. So, okay, that makes sense. Because I was actually telling my wife about that earlier today, and she was like, so they started with Grace Jones, and they ended up with a blonde white lady?
That is, well, I mean, come on, let's face some facts.
I said, yes.
That's how a lot of shit goes down. Yep. That is comics for you. Sorry, everybody. Hopefully we're going to try to all get better over time.
Hey, be better. Be better. Okay.
Yeah. Let's all try to be better.
Let's be better.
Let's be better than turning Grace Jones into Bo Derek. Shall we?
If we could.
You know what? I will take a Grace Jones over a Bo Derek any day.
I'm establishing a starting point.
Okay.
It's right there.
That's it.
Grace Jones to Bo Derek. That's the starting point.
Okay. Perfect.
Just kidding. I have no agency to start a starting point for that conversation, so please ignore me.
Yeah. I'm terrified to start that conversation. Anyway, guys, buy things at Coast City Comics. We are currently closed, and so that's why I'm doing all of these things, so that I actually get to talk to people who are, you know, I'm putting it out there so that maybe if you want your dose of talking about nonsense at a comic shop, you might be able to get it through these podcasts. And also it's nice to talk to Chad. And so thank you guys so much. That is at at Funbox Monster Podcast is one, at Coast City Comics is another. I'm going to go through all of them. At Actually Comics and at Coast City Comics. No, fuck.
We Coast don't even City know Comics our own Club. Social media.
It's Coast City Comics Club. That's what this one is. Got it.
And then there's at Funbox Monster Podcast too, right?
And there's also at Funbox Monster Podcast. There's at Funbox Monster and at Funbox Monster Podcast. Yeah, we're really racking up the Instagram accounts.
God.
Oh, and also at The Rad Wraith, if you want to follow what's going on with Rad Wraith stuff. So that's a lot.
Boy, we got to consolidate.
A lot of stuff. No way, man.
All right.
Fuck that. You know, I worry that there are plenty of people who are like, man, I'm really into comics. I do not want to hear about your dumb horror movie stuff. Lots of people who are into horror movies who are like, I do not give a shit about comic books.
That's true.
So many people who are like, I don't give a fuck about skateboarding. And I'm like, I want to talk about skateboarding and comics. Like, okay, So like the punk rock stuff, the skateboarding stuff, the comic stuff, and the horror movie stuff, I think keeping a nice separation between all of them, you know, the people who that Venn diagram crossover for, it's like me and Rick Remender and like maybe like six other people. So
that's fair.
I'm
I separated my art stuff from my regular account, and I feel like that really paid off.
Yeah, I think so too.
So I completely get it.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much, and we will see you next week with another bunch of nonsense.
It's your pick next
and,
week.
My pick next week.
Yep.
Probably going to be another X-Men thing.
Sure.
I'm on an X-Men roll. I can't help it. So awesome. Thank you guys so much, and we will see you next week. Good night.
Bye.
All right.